Welcome to I Feel Tried the podcast. I'm Dez, and joining me today is a special friend I have who is also a political analyst. And I want to welcome to our Pride Month edition, Mr. Ryan Basham. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, you know, living the dream over here.
Yes, that's right. You are in Southern California. We know each other from being out in LA and doing that whole thing, right?
Yeah. I live in the heart of it. I live in Hollywood. I just moved to Hollywood for some reason.
Oh, shit.
I live like 2 blocks away from the massive Scientology complex on Sunset. I don't know why I did that. But now I told everybody where I live, too. So, well.
Oh, shit. So if you're in the area. No, I'm just kidding. Wait, I'm forgetting where that is. I lived in LA for like a short stint when I was 20 and then I turned 21. But I've always lived in Ventura County, which is only like 45 minutes away. So I would always drive into it whenever I do something, whether it was at night or actually how we know each other, which is kind of a fun little story, right?
Yeah, it is a fun little story. Quite a story.
I think it's so fun, but for whatever reason, I've never truly gone into it on this podcast and explained what shows that I've done. I've done 2 little episodes, you know, for minutes at a time, really, when it came down to it. We were there for like, what, 14 hours?
Yeah, something I think, crazy for, like that.
For the one that we did. Yeah. So it was a long ass time. Didn't even have a speaking role, really. My lines got cut. But we met because we were both cast for a show called Million Dollar Matchmaker. Yeah. Maybe you've heard of it. So that's with Patty Stanger. She's like a high end, what do you call it?
Matchmaker. She's like.
Matchmaker, yeah.
She helps people who have a ton of money find their dream person, I guess.
Yeah, their dream person.
Their dream person, supposedly.
And we were contenders to be someone's dream person. So
Yes, we were.
That's a pretty big compliment. I don't know. I'd say so.
How did they find you though? Because they found me on Facebook. I think I was a friend of a friend.
They like scouted you?
Yeah, I was a friend. I was a friend of a friend of one of the casting people on Facebook. They like, yeah, and so okay. They're like, hey, you want to go on a dating show? I was like, sure.
You knew what it was right away though, right?
Yeah, I Googled it and I thought, well, this is going to be an interesting experience or a train wreck, and either way, I'm here for it. So
yeah, exactly. I'm always here for reality TV, being on TV. I've always wanted to be on TV, so that was cool. So I was actually part of this like pilot season of another reality dating show called, oh my God, why am I telling everyone? No, don't look it up. It was called Love at First Kiss.
I was on that too.
Wait, really? I thought you said this was your first show.
No, it was.
Oh.
I was on that too. That was but nobody ever saw that. So I don't think it really counts for me anyway. They nobody ever saw me.
Oh. I was going to say, well, there was this one recurring person on that show that kept getting played on viral clips, like back when The Soup was a thing. And I know, like, you know, different discussion talk shows, morning shows, because of it was like he's never kissed someone before.
Oh.
And so he had his first like 2 or 3 kisses on camera.
Well, that wasn't me.
Wow, I didn't know you were on that. Wow. See, it wasn't Ryan, everybody.
I don't think they used me because I didn't feel any magic and I didn't pretend that I had, so I could be on the show longer or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I did. I did that. I was like, this is my first opportunity to be on TV. I'm already over here. Why am I gonna like say no? Like, hello, this is an opportunity. Take that opportunity.
They were like, did you feel any sparks? And I was like, nope. Didn't even hesitate. Didn't even skip a beat. And as soon as I said no, I was like, oh, am I gonna regret that? Are they gonna cut me out? I just thought it was a weird thing. It was so weird.
Definitely strange concept. It was cool that it was original, you know, it was brand new. I used to work at Saddle Ranch on Sunset Boulevard. Loved that job. It was so fun. I know, right on Sunset. I felt like I got to party while I was at work. It was cool. So I had my friend Kelly, who she was a host there, and then she, I guess, became a producer, and she hit me up randomly and said, hey, I'm looking for, you know, openly gay people to be on this dating show, and I think you'd be a really good fit. And, you know, we had that whole discussion. So because it came from her and she's such a like sweet human being, I felt protected. I felt like, okay, she's giving, you know, she's offering this opportunity to me because she thinks it could actually become something, you know, not just some trashy TV show, like Next or something, or Room Raiders, you know, from back in the day. I legitimately thought I was going to find my, like, forever being. I thought there was a chance, you know? And then I realized they didn't ask a whole lot of in-depth questions anyways. Now that I think back, I thought, okay, well, how are they going to actually know if they didn't really ask me any really big questions? And then, you know, I figured that out after the fact. Yeah. But
I have a background in producing, and so I didn't expect it to be very organic. So I guess I went in kind of a little bit more clear-eyed about, oh, well, you know, this is probably all stunt casting, and none of this is really meant to actually be truly magical. But they're gonna, you know, like, I don't know, that's what I kind of was pessimistic about. It I was like, this is gonna be a weird experience, but whatever, I'm in, nothing magical is going to come out of it. But I think in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, what a cool start would be if I really did meet my person. But, right? you know, I didn't.
Who were you paired with? Was he on the show?
I don't remember if he was on the show.
Because you said you weren't. You didn't end up.
So far as I know, I never saw it. And I never, okay. And I don't know anybody who did. And when I tried finding it, I couldn't find me. You know what I mean? Okay. So it's possible that I ended up on it for a brief moment, but I don't, I could never find any evidence that I had made the final cut.
Yeah. Mine was pretty awful. That's why I didn't really tell a lot of people. I told people in person. I felt like it was a good experience. I took it seriously, but apparently what was shown is I had a pimple on my chin here. And I knew that I was 20 years old, right? Like, I knew that I had pimple. I didn't feel like it was gross. Everyone has pimples. Hello. So because I felt like it was a priority of mine to be nice to everybody, like, in the back. And I mean, I looked at it as an opportunity, right? It's an opportunity for me to be, you know, on this platform, which is what I've always wanted. I was really doing music a lot at the time. So I think because of that, they really took care of me with the editing a little bit. Like, they felt bad that the person they paired me with was supposed to be like the villain of the show. And so, like, he of course made comments about my pimple and like, ew, it's so gross. I felt like I was kissing his pimple the whole time. Oh. And so it was it was not what I thought at all after watching it on TV, like a year and some months later. It was crazy. But then when we got casted on the show together for $1 Million Matchmaker, they cast that same guy on there. And so I thought, shit, they want drama. They probably want us to confront each other, knowing that the history that we had. But I thought, no, I'd rather be known as easy to work with than a one-time episode, and that's the last time I ever get cast on something. So we had a conversation after filming, and he apologized to me for how he treated me on camera. And I felt vindicated.
Well, that's nice. Did he tell you that they had told him to be the villain?
They said that they asked him on that show. He actually finished filming early on $1 Million Matchmaker because he didn't want to do it anymore, he said. So he was supposed to be in like the final scene, and he said no. Like, he's actually one of the ones who was causing a scene off camera. And I remember we were all like in that little cocktail lounge area. Uh-huh. And yeah, he like started having a scene, so we all got moved somewhere else. And yeah, whatever. It came full circle to me. And it's just funny that that's how we know each other. So
funny.
Long story long.
I know. Long story long. It's so cool. Like, how do you know each other? Oh, we met on Grindr. Oh, we met at a party. Oh, we met, you know. Oh, well, we were on a dating show together, so...
You're on a dating show looking for a sugar daddy, so that's how we know.
I don't mind being a kept woman, you know what I mean? I don't.
I told my mom that one time, and she's not the kind, like, we don't have, like, casual-ass conversations with each other like I would with my friends. Mm-hmm. And I told her one time, like, I'm not above having someone take care of me. I'm not above that. And she thought that was so weird. She's like, she thought I was being funny, because it is a funny thing to say.
Yeah.
And she was like, wait, are you serious though? Like, that's so funny. Des.
I used to be so proud. I was like, I don't need any man to take care of me. I'm gonna, you know, I'm gonna make my way in the world independently and all this stuff. And the older I get, the more I'm like, you know what? There are plenty of people who like are totally capable people, but they marry someone super famous and wealthy and powerful and stuff, and it works out just fine for them. Like,
that's all I want.
Like Jeff Bezos' wife, I can never remember her first name. I just know that I can never remember her name, period. I just Linda know
or something.
Something. But you know what? She is one of the wealthiest women in the world today, and she's able to do all kinds of stuff with her power and wealth. And you know that. I mean, she helped build Amazon, but it's not like she built Amazon. You know, she married well.
That is right. That is right. Well, before we get into deep conversation about politics, because that's why you're here, I want to highlight LGBTQ plus figures who excel in their industries. I've been seeing you grinding on social media and doing a lot of really good work and stuff that I can agree with. You know, that's a big factor. I can chat with someone who I don't agree with, but I think it's even more fun when you do agree with, yeah, with their beliefs. So I'm glad to have you here. Before we get into that, I do want to do one last little icebreaker segment, okay, that we call Thank You Next.
Let's do it.
So what I have for you is a list of just various objects or behaviors, personality types. And what I want from you is to let me know if you like what I'm saying, you can say thank you. And if you don't, you can say next.
Okay.
Okay, let's start with Crocs.
Oh.
What do you think about Crocs?
Next. I was just in Dallas and I saw like two things everywhere. I saw parents of young children that had these like buggy things they pulled their kids around in. I was like, that's not a thing in LA. And Crocs. I was like, I forgot Crocs were a thing. I even saw gays with Crocs.
I know, because, okay, so I love Nicki Minaj. Like, that's my girl, but she posted like these big photos that went viral for the day at least, of her wearing these Crocs. And so now I feel like all types of people are starting to wear Crocs and think that it's a fashion statement.
No.
And like, it has never been.
Well, it's a statement.
Yes, just nothing fashionable about it. You're right about that. It's crazy to me. I'm like, you guys, you can't just give in to every single little trend. Like, no, you're going to look back the way that we did the first time these came out and be like, what was I thinking?
Look, the reasons to own Crocs are very few. There's like, you work in a hospital. You're mm-hmm. like the parent of adult children and aren't trying to be attractive anymore. And then beyond that, I can't really think of a good reason to have Crocs.
See, I can say I would not root for my mom wearing them. I would definitely tell her very clearly, and she has adult children. I would be like, come on, girl, you need to pull it together. But I can say maybe a baby.
Yeah.
Babies, I think, can get away with, you know, mm-hmm. wearing different kinds of shoes that are horrible. So totally. If you have a baby, they look cute in anything. So whatever.
Yeah. If it's the kind of thing where, like, you just got to get the shoes on the baby, Crocs are fine.
There you go. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Whatever. Cool. Okay, we're on the same page. How about Grindr? You brought it up earlier, so bring it up again.
I thank you. I love Grindr because I love apps like that in general, because one of my favorite things to do is go to a new place and just turn it on and see what happens, because there are all kinds of people on Grindr. Like, true story. So one of the things I do is I produce on TV, and the very first script I ever optioned to produce was from a writer I met on Grindr when we were both back in, like, I grew up in East Tennessee, he grew up in North Carolina, and back then, you know, well, especially there, like, the next closest person to you on Grindr could be 200 miles away. So we met over the holidays on Grindr. Shit. We became fast friends, and he was a screenwriter, and I optioned his script. It's like, we never hooked up or anything. It was just a friendly thing. Yeah. You know, I've met all kinds of interesting people on Grindr, and it's very often totally platonic or business. I've made business relationships left and right. It's great. It's a great social experiment.
That's how I feel about it. Of course, there's, you know, the horrible side of it, which I think is the majority, is very grimy and mm-hmm. a little nasty.
Yeah.
But I've always said that I don't have a gaydar. I just really don't. I have wishful thinking. That's all I have is wishful thinking. So Grindr acts as a gaydar for me. You know, I'm able to be like, okay, is that person in the room? Are they on Grindr? If I open it up and I see they are, then there's a chance.
Yes.
And I don't have to have an awkward conversation.
Yes.
Where I get turned down.
I hate that people are anti-Grindr, because I'm like, look, especially if I'm in a mixed crowd and I see somebody that I'm interested in, but I don't want to like make a scene by hitting on a straight person or something, I just open Grindr and see if they're there. And if they are, great. Exactly. Like, hey, what's up? And if they're not, you know, I may or may not go talk to them, but I probably won't, because I'm up to stuff. I got shit to do.
There you go. That's right.
It's so easy. Right. It's free. It's like pinging on someone's radar, like you said.
I would like to meet someone who pays for their grinder, because that shit's expensive. Like, the plans that they have, like, the minimum is like a $40 plan or something like that. Like, no, $40 a month.
That's the $1 million match.
There, that's the new one. Yes. Patty, sorry. How about reality TV as a whole?
Oh, I'm going to say thank you, because reality TV has elevated artists in certain genres that would never have been elevated otherwise. Like, drag is like a truly international phenomenon now, that it's existed for decades, but now it's a thing that lots and lots of people appreciate and respect. And it would never have been treated like the art form it is today if it weren't for reality TV. So
that is so precise. Wow. Even I had like some weird thoughts about drag back in the day. And I mean, I'll openly admit it. Luckily, I'm not in that same mind frame now. I love drag. I'm obsessed with Drag Race. I guess I should say Drag Race, because there's a difference between real life drag and Drag Race, as I learned a few weeks ago interviewing a drag queen here in San Antonio. She said that it's just so different, you know, that they don't do the challenges that you see on TV. They just come and they perform for adults, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad I grew out of that. I always looked at drag, and this is probably what, in the mid 2000s, as being such a stereotype for all gay people. And I didn't want to be looked at as being a stereotype in any way, because I always felt like I'm original. Like I bring what I have, and I don't know that I fit in any sort of category. I just want to be who I am. And for drag, I felt like it was just giving people that are not accepting more reason to be like, see, you guys are the extremes, you're the extreme. And then I realized, okay, if I want allies and I want people to accept me and my community, how am I gonna go and discriminate against my own community, like from mm-hmm. within, you know?
Yeah.
So luckily, snapped out of that shit, watched all the seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race, and now I love going to live shows. I love seeing it on TV.
Yes.
I love it.
Same.
Yeah. How about cancel culture?
Ooh. You know, next, because I'm a big fan of restorative justice, and I think there are people who really need to be pushed out of the public eye, but not most of the people who are. You know, like I think like former Senator Al Franken is a great example of somebody who he was a warrior for all kinds of great progressive issues, including women's issues. And, you know, something he did decades ago that looked bad, obviously, but in the moment, at the time, what did not mean quite what it does now. Obviously, women have always been treated poorly by society and the men in it, and it was indicative of that, and women's experiences were different than men's experiences and all that. But in the world of comedy, the photo he took with the woman on that plane that ended up getting him canceled out of the US Senate was not appropriate for people in general, but among people who do like improv and stand-up comedy and stuff like that, was kind of par for the course. And I think I would like to have seen, in hindsight, I think reparations made as opposed to not being allowed to be in the US Senate anymore. I mean, it all worked out in the end. In fact, the person who took over his seat was a woman. So there's that. That's good. And she's a great senator too. But he was a really great advocate for progressive issues and really got stuff done and helped demystify the process of government for everyday people. So I don't think canceling him out of the US Senate was the right call. But then again, I'm a cisgender man. So, you know, maybe other people have a different perspective than I do.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. There's something for me about seeing somebody learn, especially, you know, like on, I guess, reality TV is mostly of what I watch and where we see a lot of that happening right mm-hmm. now. And I want to see, because if you're at least given more opportunity to see if you can learn and recover from that, mm-hmm. then there you go. And if we see that you don't, then okay.
Totally.
Now we know exactly what to think of you.
And I think those opportunities are an opportunity to like model change for others. And if we don't give people everybody has done something they're afraid, virtually everyone has done something in their past they're afraid that if it came out or somebody made a deal of it, it could ruin their lives. Like yep. nowadays, especially, like most people mm-hmm. have things they're afraid of having to talk about now that they did in their past. And if we have mm-hmm. a society where everybody, where you can expect that if any mistake you ever made will ruin everything for you, I mean, we're going to run out of people. Yeah. You know, so I think, and also, you know, a lot of people we need to win over, the people who are like in middle America who need to get on board with using people's preferred pronouns, for instance, They need a roadmap. They need like an off-ramp from the person they currently are into the person we would like them to grow into being. And if all they can see is, well, I fucked it up before, so there's no room for me, so I'm going to reject this altogether, mm-hmm. that's not good for our movement at all.
I could not agree more. How about increasing the minimum wage?
Yes. Yes.
Nationwide.
Please. Thank you very much. More, please. Yes. And you know, what really frustrates me is people who make let's say the fight for 15, for instance. There are people who make $15, $16, $17 an hour now who think, well, that's not fair. I already earned my way to making that much money. And, you know, the value of the dollar I make will be less valuable because other people will be making the same amount. That's not how minimum wage works. We know for a fact that when the minimum wage goes up, and it takes a minute, but when the minimum wage goes up, everybody else's wages all the way up the food chain go up too. That's just how it works. So there, everyone wins when the people who earn the least win. It's always been that way, and that's how it'll be. But people have these bass-ackwards ideas about minimum wage being a threat to them because, you know, honestly, Republicans and Fox News propagate those false ideas. But that's kind of what they do because that works for them, and people believe them, unfortunately.
So that actually kind of led me into what I was thinking while you were saying that about why. Okay, so Fox News puts out these false ideas of why it's not a good thing. Because I want to know who doesn't think this is a good thing and why do you want to stunt that from happening for other people?
Yeah, I mean, there are people out in the world who think that not everyone deserves to have health insurance. So you got to take, all these things you got to take. There are still like, something like 30% of Americans still think Richard Nixon was a good president. So, you know, we'll never get 100%. So, but I think, people have really incorrect, just factually false ideas about what it'll be like if everyone has universal healthcare, what it would be like if we had a higher minimum wage that are just incorrect. But two things. A, Fox News profits out of sensationalizing things and scaring people who don't know what's what into being angry about something that they are scared of now because Fox News told them to be scared. So that's why they do it. They're doing it for profit. It's not even, I mean, there are people who want to enshrine the oligarchy of the wealthiest people in America running our society. That benefits them because they are the wealthiest people. Either that or their patrons are the wealthiest people. Like, you know, there are some people in Congress whose patrons are those wealthy people. The people who are the rank and file folks at Fox News, their patrons are wealthy people who want to hold down the everyday working man and woman, or person. But at the end of the day, these ideas are spread because, and it's just like, if you watch movies about like, you know, the feudal system, like if you go back to like the Victorian era, like movies about, you know, like Romeo and Juliet era stories, and you see how the wealthy people, the kings and queens and the lords and stuff, you know, they intentionally try to hold down the pauper, poor people who have nothing. This is the same version of that for the 21st century. This is just letting people, individuals are smart, people are stupid. They let people believe things that aren't true so that they can hold them down and maintain their power. That's all this is. I could go on about this for hours.
Well, we can actually after this last one. Celebrities in office.
I'm going to say,
thinking about it?
The vast majority of the time, pass. However, I think Al Franken was a really good U.S. senator.
I don't even know who that is.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So he was on Saturday Night Live, like in the 80s, I think. And he, if you should Google him, you'll recognize his face. And then he's originally from Minnesota. So after many years in comedy, he decided to run for the U.S. Senate and narrowly beat a Republican by like a handful of votes. And then he won re-election by a landslide. Well, not a landslide, but by a lot, by comparison. And he was an incredible U.S. senator, but he's also a really smart, thoughtful person who, for people who were following him, was demystifying the process and making a real difference. But you know, miss me entirely with Ronald Reagan, Caitlyn Jenner, Kanye West, these people who have no business being in the public eye, let alone because, and when I say no business being a public eye, Kanye is a great musician. He has no business being a thought leader of any kind for any reason to anyone. He's actually not stable. Caitlyn Jenner could not think her way out of a wet paper bag. So these are not people who need to be in the public eye influencing what other people think and feel about how the world works. So miss me with that. Next.
Are you ever just feeling like really bitchy and not in a good way? Recess has launched their brand new flavor, Strawberry Rose. And you know I love a strawberry. I'm from Ventura County. Shout out. Recess is a flavored sparkling water beverage infused with CBD designed to keep you calm, cool, and collected. So you're not going to be stoned, but you're still going to chill. Now they're launching their brand new mood-enhancing powder sticks so you can add them to your own water as you go. You can find them available in unflavored gradient berry and lemon citrus. It's really cool because you already have water at home, I'm assuming, so why not add it to it and make it a day? Use the code IFEELTRIED for 15% off your entire purchase. It's a small way to reward yourself and to show your support for this show. Visit takearecess.com and don't forget to enter the code IFEELTRIED for 15% off. Happy Pride Month, y'all. Want to show a little love to this show? Leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to hit subscribe. Reviews are so important when booking guests and looking for potential sponsorships because they want to see that this show has a support system. And I know I feel supported. Thank you in advance for all the kind words coming this way and for all the beautiful reviews we've had in the past. I genuinely appreciate you. Leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, hit subscribe, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram at IFeelTried. Enjoy the rest of the show. So funny that you mentioned Caitlyn Jenner. That's what I wanted to bring up with you. Mm. Now that I am a Texas native, of course, my roots are always California. I've only been here 4 months, but I've missed it just in time for the threat of Miss Caitlyn Jenner running for governor. How serious should people take this? Because when I first heard it, I thought that's so dumb. Like, not even people on her side of the political party or whatever, they don't even want her. So how the hell are you going to get the majority of the vote, you know? But then I thought the same thing with Trump.
Exactly.
Years ago.
Exactly.
And so that scared me that many years ago. So this shit, people maybe should take a little bit serious, right?
Yeah, you know, somebody who's like a really, really like legendary Republican political analyst, I read, said something the other day about how, you know, Donald Trump, it's hard for educated people to take Donald Trump seriously. So like educated people, he's a clown and people don't take clowns seriously. But that was the mistake we made in 2016. We didn't take him seriously. And then he became president and nearly destroyed our country. Similarly, Caitlyn Jenner is non-serious. She's not a serious person. On some level, I appreciate and respect Caitlyn's expanding of the awareness of trans people for everyday folks. But even then, I know people who were on I Am Kate, like real trans activists who have lived the real life of a trans person, not the famous wealthy person who had all the privilege in the world before transitioning. Yeah. And even they were like, she doesn't get it. She does not get the struggle. And she doesn't get anything. And so, you know, she's dangerous, not because she's capable, but because she's influential by virtue of her fame and wealth. And so, you know, she could end up being governor if we're not careful. On one hand, we have an open primary system in California, and there are a bajillion Republicans running, which is great. I would love to see all the Republicans split their vote and then not get anywhere. But on the other hand, you know, she really could. I mean, the last time we had a recall on the ballot, Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor. So yeah, we have a history of removing good Democrats from the governor's mansion and replacing them with celebrities. And that's not great, especially when Caitlyn Jenner's the celebrity we're talking about right now. So no, miss me. I mean, she even in her Fox News town hall thing she did a couple weeks ago, she was suggesting these things that she thought were brilliant ideas. I don't know why we don't take money away from the high-speed rail project and build desalination plants on the coast, and that's how we can solve our water problem. That's an option that's been thoroughly explored already. She just doesn't know that because she's not trying. she doesn't know to look into her ideas that she thinks are revolutionary to find out if they've already been tried before. She would be a horrible governor. And, you know, we're the sixth, I think now the fifth largest economy in the world by ourselves. We have a record surplus, we have a surplus. We're doing, California has problems. Every place has problems. No place is perfect, but we're doing very well compared to many, many other states. And the last thing we need is someone who's never accomplished anything except being athletic in the 70s to be running our
that's
state.
That's a read. Holy shit.
You know, that's, we don't need that. We don't need it.
Absolutely. So I wonder, is there a lack of voter participation when it comes to something like voting for the governor?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I don't vote in every election. I'm not proud of it. It's just a fact. And now that I know better, I can do better. But in the past, I've only voted for the past, like, I think 3 elections. That's all I've been eligible to vote for. How do we have someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger get voted in and hopefully not Caitlyn Jenner voted in? Is it lack of voters?
Yes, yes. I mean, people think that the only elections that exist or matter are the ones that happen every 4 years for president and then whatever else is on the ballot. There are elections all the time. Every 2 years, we vote on our representatives in the House, in Congress. Every 2 years, a third of the U.S. Senate is up for re-election. And then beyond that, there are other special local elections for governor, state representatives, mayor, your city council, all kinds of stuff. And this election is going to be a low turnout election, like one of those many other races. And as a result of that, only the hardliners are going to show up. Unless people who care about the outcomes of what happens in their communities, what happens in their states, actually show up and vote. So, you know, I would rather you show up. You can actually cast a blank ballot. I would rather you show up and cast a blank ballot than not show up at all. And then build the habit of going to every voting in every single election. And then over time, you can get better and better at figuring out who you want to vote for and who you want to listen to when you're figuring out what you should understand to be true about the candidates. But just show up. I would rather you show up and cast a blank ballot than not vote at all, and then work your way up to actually voting in every race. But for the purposes of this, Californians really need to show up, because Republicans count on low participation in order to win. And the people who become your state representative and your mayor and your governor today will go on to be your U.S. senator and your presidential candidate and maybe even your president tomorrow. So if you don't vote now, you're setting yourself up to fail later.
How about the people who think that, well, they don't see any option that fits what their beliefs are, and I just don't even want to vote in general? We've spoken about that a few times on this podcast, about how burn votes are dangerous too. That's how people like Donald Trump got voted in. Mm-hmm. So for people in California, because that's kind of mostly what we're talking about right now, is with the threat of another celebrity, reality star, becoming governor. What do you recommend for people listening who don't feel like they even know enough about what's going to be on the ballot to participate and try to block this from happening?
I'm going to say this with all the love and compassion I can.
Oh, shit.
Grow up and do responsible shit anyway. I get it. It feels like things just never get better. It feels like things are just imperfect and there are no great options. That's a cynical, it's a choice to be that cynical. And I understand it. I feel like that sometimes myself, but this is America. We are unique in the world because we are a truly pluralistic, diverse, many backgrounds under one big tent society. And as a result of that, things move really slowly in our society, but the goal can't be radical change, because that's an unrealistic goal with disastrous consequences. That's what happened with Donald Trump. People wanted radical change, and look what we got. We almost lost our country. You know, if you really feel like it's a lesser of a few evils, just choose the least evil. That's not really what's happening, but if that's how it feels to you, just choose the least evil. Make incremental progress toward what you want, even if what you truly want isn't on the menu right now. Eventually, we'll get there. It takes time to change. We're the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the history in the world. It's like trying to change the direction of like a freighter ship as opposed to, you know, a speedboat. We're not a little speedboat. It takes time to turn around a massive ship. So do the incremental progress. Try your best to find someone who's more close to what you want than the other options, and then vote based on that. Know that over time change will happen, but it's not going to happen overnight. That's not how the world works. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I share a lot of that actually with you. I was saying some of those things in less intelligent phrases.
I have these conversations a lot, so I have a lot of practice. But thank you for thinking phrases are intelligent.
Absolutely. I don't know all the terminology, so I'll just try to get the message across as best as I can. And I'm happy with the result from November. But should there be prerequisites when running for a political seat? Because how come it's so easy for people like fucking Kanye West and Caitlyn Jenner to put their name out there and actually have it be considered?
It's really, really, really hard emotionally and intellectually to run for office. And so what you end up getting are the people who are willing to stand in the fire of the scrutiny, which are fewer and fewer people, but they're good people. And then the people who have less access to self-awareness, the concept of the possibility that they might be flawed, things like that, also running. So, I have a lot of respect for anybody who runs, even if I don't agree with them, even if I think they may be clinically insane, because it's so hard to run. It's such a big tax on who you are as a person. It can really turn your whole life upside down just to run for office, which is why better people don't run more often. So I don't know if there should be prerequisites. I think if anything, we should give more people latitude to be human and flawed so that we're more likely to get more people like us to run in the first place. But I do think it's fair to, I don't think there should be a barrier to entry except. I think that we should expect people who run, especially for high office, to publish their tax returns. I think that should be required. Everything else I think is a case by case basis, but I think everybody running for high office should release all their tax returns.
When are the elections for governor?
I believe if the recall sticks, there will be a vote this fall. And at the same time, people will be voting. There will be a few things on the ballot. One of them will be, should we recall Governor Newsom or not? And if that also passes, the other thing people vote on at the same time is, assuming we do recall Gavin Newsom, who should be governor instead? So if the first thing passes, then the results of the second thing will become who our new governor is. But they're both on the ballot at the same time. So does that make sense?
I'm not sure.
I know.
Is it one? Do you show up once to vote or do you show up twice?
Yes, you show up once to vote. And then if the result of the first question goes, get rid of Newsom, then the result of the second question becomes relevant.
Oh, so if people say no, should we recall Newsom, then the second one is redundant.
Right, exactly. Okay. So if you want to keep Gavin Newsom in office, you go and you vote no on the recall, but at the same time you vote on the person who you want to be governor if he loses the recall
just
vote
in
anyway.
Case.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay.
What will it take to officially recognize a third major candidate in presidential elections?
Well, it'll probably take a third party being more serious. In order to qualify as a major party, you have to get a percentage of the vote. So let's say the Green Party wants to be the third major party. They have to accomplish, I think it's 5 or 10% of the vote in a presidential election to then get all the benefits of having a major party in the next presidential election. And the reason why that hasn't happened is because the Green Party and the Libertarian Party are not very serious parties. They don't try very hard to build up a base of support over time. They're not running serious candidates for mayor and city council and county supervisor and state legislators. They're not running serious candidates all over the country up and down the ballot. So they can't build a base of support that would get them over that hump. If they did, which takes years to do, then eventually they could become a major party. The flip side to that is we could also try to rewrite our system such that it makes it easier for a multi-party system to exist. The challenge is that our structure of government isn't really set up for a multi-party system like it is in a parliamentary system like in the UK or in Israel or places where lots of little parties band together to create a majority in their parliament. And then the leader of that party becomes the prime minister, who is the head of their government. Our government doesn't work that way. So without getting too far into the weeds, the best thing that a minor party could do in order to become a major party is invest time, energy, and resources in running candidates for local offices and starting to win and then building a brand awareness and support for their party as a whole, so that eventually they can have a presidential candidate who beats the threshold so that their party can then become a recognized major party. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's, you said that they don't have a whole lot of support the way that the other two major parties would have. Is that a fact of financial support or just social support?
Yes. Also good leadership.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a big vision. Most of the problem with most of the candidates that run on those minor party platforms for president is that they are, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, they're more interested in access to the visibility of running for president than they are putting in the work of years of heavy lifting to make their party a serious party at the local level. And that's why they don't get very far.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I just remember on my timeline, you know, at the end of last year, actually, I'd say since the pandemic, really, that's, I started seeing an influx of people being more interested in politics. And mm-hmm. with everything going on in this country, I think it's rightfully so. But I kept seeing people on my timeline, so people I know, people I respect, that would reject both options or even all 16 of the options that we had at one point for just the Democrat side. And I'm wondering, okay, well, how come I don't feel like them? I don't relate to their outrage about who our candidates were. Sure, I'm not well versed in politics, but I pay attention to things that I feel I should pay attention to. So after talking to some of my friends about it, it seemed like the socialistic candidates that, you know, were claiming Democrat were the more popular option. So somebody like Bernie Sanders, I know there were a lot of people supporting Elizabeth Warren. Do you think that maybe candidates don't want to fall under a socialism umbrella because it might scare people into thinking it's too extreme from what we've been doing since the history of America?
I think it's, that is a thing. There are lots of factors, but one of the things, so here, I'll try to make an anecdote to make my point. Bernie Sanders used to say a lot, when we run on our issues the way we want to, we win. That is not true. That the vast majority of Americans are allergic to the word socialism. The majority of Americans do, you know, are coming along slowly on the idea of Medicare for all, are coming along slowly on the idea of, I mean, now most Americans support a minimum wage increase, but these things take time. And while you and I and all the people we know might feel certain ways about politics, nobody knows enough people to have an accurate picture of how American society as a whole feels. There are over 330 million Americans. No one person can know enough people personally to have an accurate sense of how our entire society feels. But we think we do because all our friends agree with us. So people overbet on their ideas being popular because they see that their friends and the people they're connected to on social media agree. But part of the calculus of being a politician is, I know I want to make change, but I have to do it in a way that low information people who only pay attention a few months out of every 4 years are going to be able to tolerate, are going to be able to understand, are going to be able to support. So like Obama supported gay marriage years before he said so, and he had to say he didn't in order to win. But if Obama had not been president, gay marriage would not have unfolded the way that it did. Mm-hmm. So it's running for office and accomplishing change are really hard, challenging, difficult things to do. And so when we get ruled by our emotions instead of our logic, when we start having our feelings rule our political decisions as opposed to our calculus and our strategy, that's when we get in trouble by backing a horse that can't win. Mm-hmm. That's what happens there. So if people think more strategically about the long haul, the thing is, I say this as somebody who used to be, when I got into politics a long time ago, I was that person. Let's make radical change now, believing that was possible. And then I tried really hard with all the people who came into politics at the same time with me. And then we learned the hard way that change is slow. Occasionally, you get a burst of growth, but that's not the everyday. And that's not just the way our society is built. It's just not practical to, you can try your entire life to make rapid change and occasionally get progress, but the people who are slow and steady win the race.
Okay. Yeah. And that's not to discourage anyone. It's just to really get a better understanding of how it works.
No,
right?
Feel how you feel, fight for what you fight for. Just understand the context you're fighting in so that you're not mad and defeated at the end of the day, you've done your best and you've learned something, and then you can apply those lessons for the next fight.
Okay, well said. Well, I want to get into our last game then, just to kind of leave it off on a well, actually, maybe not a lighter note. I don't know.
Let's see what happens.
Because this game is a fun one that I like to play. And I have a list of public figures or celebrities, if you will. I want to know if you find these individuals to contribute positively or negatively to society. So if positive, you'll say productive. If negative, you can say destructive.
Okay, great.
So this is productive or destructive?
Productive or destructive, let's go.
Yes. Okay, number one, Wendy Williams.
I gotta say destructive. I think she's so fun, and she's got a lot of influence, but every time it matters, she somehow manages to say something that adds to divisiveness, lack of inclusion. And I think she's probably a lovely person, and I think she's so fun. I enjoy watching her, but I don't think her legacy is going to be one of having made things better.
Okay, that's fair. How about the Kardashians?
Destructive.
Really?
Yeah, I've yet to. Yeah, I think individually some of them may be really bright people, but they make it easy for us to celebrate vanity in a way that I don't think is productive. I'm not against being vain. I've got plenty of vanity in me, but I think I think we should be celebrating people who have made change in the world, or we should be celebrating people who lead on making our society a better place. I don't see how the Kardashians have made our society a better place. To be fair, I feel that way about the British monarchy too. I don't think we should be celebrating them particularly either. But I think we should be celebrating, like the woman who is the lead scientist on the on developing the Ford F-150 is a middle-aged Chinese American woman who immigrated when she was two. And she's the lead scientist on developing the Ford F-150. We should be celebrating people like that.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people fail to acknowledge the work that Kim has done with, what's the term? I mean, if I want to say it casually, I'll just say with getting people out of prison that are serving life sentences for nonviolent first-time drug charges.
She has contributed to that, sure, absolutely, but there are absolutely people and who exposure. Have done way more than her. Yeah, that's fair. She has attained a platform and then used it to a limited measure to raise awareness of things, and that's important and valuable, and I'm glad. I don't think these are useless people. I think they tried the best with what they got. I just think we should be celebrating other people more. That's all. I just wish we had a society that valued accomplishment first.
Yeah, I think it's, entertainment industry. So people that are focusing on entertainment are not looking for, unfortunately, for things like scientists.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Rocket stuff.
Yeah. There isn't a politician or a scientist or somebody who replaces what Matthew McConaughey is in society. I totally get that. I see every Matthew McConaughey movie. So yeah, I hear you. I guess I'm a little bit of a, stick in the mud.
How about Meghan McCain?
I think there are productive elements of Meghan McCain.
You can give her that credit. Wow.
Yeah. Because she's a serious thinker. I don't agree with her, and I think sometimes she says stupid shit. But regardless of the ways I disagree with her, I think she's a great example of a powerful woman using what she has access to make the difference she sees fit to make, even if I don't like her difference.
Nice. Okay. And how about Van Jones?
Overall productive. I think Van Jones, again, making an effort to make change, sometimes sticks his foot in his mouth, but educates people in a way that is, on the whole, useful.
Okay.
Now I'm feeling worse about the way that I treated the Kardashians a minute ago, because I guess they do educate some people sometimes.
Andy Cohen.
Andy Cohen, I overall productive. I think he's productive.
Why did you hesitate?
Well, because I think there's some trivial things that I feel like he makes it, he's an entertainer. But I think overall, I think he makes it easier for straight people to feel comfortable with queer culture, and I think that's important. I don't want my primary concern to be straight people being comfortable with queer culture, still, I think that's important, and he helps with that.
Well said. And the last one, Ellen DeGeneres.
Productive. She is singularly responsible for a massive leap forward in our society being comfortable with queer people. So she's made mistakes, but that's an entertainer. That's an entertainer who's really made a difference.
That's good. I've supported her even through all the hot water, just because I feel like she's human first and foremost.
Yeah.
Of course, if I were on the other hand of someone giving me attitude, I don't care who it is. If I get attitude from you, I'm not going to like it, you know, I'm not gonna have a good taste in my mouth. But I think that, you know, people expect celebrities to be perfect and to not have real emotions the way that you or I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it comes down to with her. So it's cool to see someone else support her.
Totally. Yeah.
She has done a lot. Those are really good points you made about Andy Cohen and Ellen DeGeneres to wrap it up and bring it into our Pride celebration. I think those are both really nice figures that I'm glad are visible to people like you and me and to our community. And
absolutely.
They've done a lot.
And it's not like we see them being just dramatic and petty all the time. We see them experiencing joy, uplifting voices, expanding people's horizons. Those are important things that I don't feel like are so true for the Kardashians. I feel like a lot of what the Kardashians do is just playing out drama that's not even necessarily even honest drama. Sometimes it's forced. And that's a different thing to me. But whatever, I'm going to get hate mail really, for saying that.
You're really trying to go in on my girls, the Kardashians. And again, it is a reality TV show. You're a producer. You understand how that works. So you understand that the 1 hour we see a week, if you're watching, is very concentrated on a storyline rather than what your everyday is. You know, people don't want to see the first 4 hours of my day either, me going on for walks with my little dog and, you know, making coffee and sweeping my floor. Like, that shit's boring.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm going to defend them. But I want to thank you so, so much for being part of this podcast, lending your voice here, taking time out of your day, because I know you're very busy. And it's just so awesome to have another LGBTQ person here that excels in their industry, that knows what they're talking about, and is a good example, I think, for other queer people like me.
Appreciate that. It's my pleasure to be here. And if you could just walk around and say things like that to me all day, I'd feel great. So.
Sure. Okay. All right. Yeah. I'll come up with something. So everybody listening at home, I hope you're having a wonderful Thirsty Thursday. Happy Pride Month. Weekend's coming up, so be safe. And think of us as queer people when you're celebrating. Do a pride toast to us while you're out there.
Indeed.
Thanks again, Ryan. And we'll see you all next time.
Bye.